Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Hello, I'm here today with Pete, and some of you may know him as Wheelie or Wheelie Dealer from his Twitter, extensive Twitter feeds, and his blog, which he writes weekly.
Do you write it weekly?
I write it quite a few times, yeah. Probably a couple of times a week.
Okay. And since he's such a social media personality, I thought he'd be a great guy to talk us through social media and investing. Pete, you started with social media how long ago?
Yeah, I mean, it was really when I started my website. So we're talking just over 3 years ago. And the sort of basic idea was to have a website, but to have this Twitter component. So rather than just being like a flat website I update a couple of times a week, there'd be a more sort of immediate, almost real-time kind of connection. It's almost like, I think the way it works, it's like anything I think just gets sent out on a tweet. You know, if I think it's relevant to a stock, or if I'm reading results in the morning, I think, oh yeah, that's really important. And then out goes a tweet. And I tend to work in that way, really.
And had you been using social media for forever?
No. The funny thing was, my friend Mark had said to me that he'd started using Twitter probably about 6 months before. And I guess, you know, it was still fairly new to most people 3 years ago. And Mark used to say that he'd use it and there was so much information on it. And I was like, oh, you know, I don't want all that modern rubbish, you know. And then what happened was, I started the idea of the website and the idea of using Twitter as well. And I remembered that on some other websites, and I think it was like Seeking Alpha or something, I actually saw on the website they have like a Twitter feed that sits in the website. I thought, well, that shows that you could have a real sort of integration of Twitter with your website. So that's what I wanted to do.
And what prompted you to start your website?
I stopped working, it must be about 8 or 9 years ago, whatever it was. And I'd got to the point 3 years ago where I'd sort of read all the books, done all the research, tried all these various different things I wanted to do. And I was sort of like plateaued. I sort of felt like I wasn't really moving my learning forward, my knowledge forward. And I sort of had this gap and I just wanted something to get my teeth into, you know. And the beauty of the website is that in a lot of the last jobs I had when I worked for Fujitsu were working on proposals, doing proposal management and proposal editing. So I was used to like writing stuff, and I was used to like getting other people's words and to making them into better English and to correcting all the spelling, all that kind of stuff. And I was sort of quite liked playing with words. And the nice thing about it is that, you know, okay, my first efforts of blogs on the website are pretty miserable, but as time's gone on, I've sort of got into it more, and I sort of like, I think I quite enjoy the writing of it now. I mean, some blogs you sort of, you know, after a few weeks of working on, you're like, oh God, I hate this blog now, I just want to finish it, you know. But then most of them, you know, if you start them off and you got like a really good, like I did a long series, I think it was about 6 or 7 blogs, about doing an income portfolio. And I quite enjoyed doing it because it, you know, had a nice structure to it. And I could sort of feel the use for myself of actually doing this process. And it was obvious to me that a lot of readers and a lot of friends I got, I knew would actually really use this. So I thought it was a really worthwhile thing to do.
How long does it take you to write a blog?
It really depends. I mean, you know, I have some flashes sometimes where I can just literally knock a blog out in an hour, you know, or just get a basic draft done in an hour. And what I tend to do is I'll do that basic draft, and then, you know, sometimes weeks later I'll come back to it because I'll have been thinking about it in the meantime, and I'll be tweaking it and adding bits and improving it, you know, until I get finally bored and it goes out the door.
Do you have to do much research?
It depends. I mean, the stock ones take a lot of research. You know, they're the ones. But it kills two birds with one stone, because what I tend to do when I write about a stock, it's a stock I'm interested in that I'm probably going to buy. And it gives a real, you know, if you see the stock buy rationale blogs that I've written, they tend to have a very formalized structure. Mm. And it sort of forces me to address all of those issues. It's sort of the checks I was doing anyway, but in a more formalised way. And I think that really helps.
So taking social media across the board, what social media do you use?
Well, because I'm so busy on Twitter, I just frankly don't have time for other things. And people say to me, oh, come and join my Facebook groups and all sorts of things like that. And it's like, well, it just gets too much. So I just stick to Twitter. But obviously, I use bulletin boards. I mean, the ADVFN boards, the free boards, are actually surprisingly good. But I don't use them in that way of writing entries in them and stuff like that and commenting much. It's more about say, for instance, one of your stocks does a weird move and you're thinking, why has that dropped 8% or why is that up, you know? You can go on the board and sometimes you can pick out why it's happened, and that's very useful, you know, like a broker's upgraded it or something or whatever. So I find that really useful. But obviously, you know, with bulletin boards, you've got to be a little bit careful because they can just be just, you know, soul destroying, some of them, and the nasty comments and stuff. Which is one of the great things about Twitter that I absolutely love is that it's like people are really good on it, really polite on it. I think we're sort of lucky that the kind of stocks we talk about are so boring that the trolls can't be bothered with us, you know. I think if you get more into the sort of high-risk, speculative aim stuff, you get a lot more abuse. But no, Twitter is just so helpful, you know.
What do you get out of Twitter?
I think it's great for the discipline side of things. You know, it really forces discipline on you when you're telling the world every trade you do, every time you buy something, every time you sell something, what price, what amount. It just puts an enormous discipline on you. That if you don't have that, you know, that discipline is completely down to you. In a way, it's like I've sort of offloaded the discipline. I need to be disciplined myself, but in a way, this whole world of people is disciplining me as well. So I think that's a really useful thing. But the other great thing is, one thing that's really hit me in the last few years, since starting the Wheelie Dealer website and the whole thing, was that in the past, you know, we've all been able to access the gurus. You know, you can get, you know, we all know who they are, you know, all these famous gurus, and they've all written millions of books and all the usual stuff. And we can all access that. But I think for a lot of people, there's actually a lot more value in seeing how other private investors actually go about doing things. And then in a way, instead of comparing yourself to this multi-millionaire who's making 30, 40, 50% a year leveraged up, you know, and just making incredible numbers, it's like you've got a more realistic comparison. You can look to the great people like Leon Boris and David Strader and whatever, and you say, well, you know, they've done amazing things. You know, and that is achievable. Okay, we can't all be Leon Boris and David Strader, but, you know, it sort of gives you an aspiration that is more sensible. And you can see how these people do things. And then it's given me access to have discussions with incredible investors. And it's just, I would never have had that before. It's been remarkable and so useful.
What sort of investors have you met through Twitter?
Well, you know, again, loads of people of similar sort of outlook to myself, or investing in similar stocks and stuff. But, you know, just such a wide range. And it's like, you know, it's what I said earlier about I felt my learning had plateaued. One great thing through Twitter is it's given me access to several people that have actually helped me push that learning up again. You know, and the particular one that stands to mind is Stealth Surf. Jason at Stealth Surf does a website called tradingbases.com or .co.uk. And he's fantastic because his is much more mechanical, trading-orientated approach, using breakouts as triggers and whatever. But that's taught me so much. And even though I don't follow his system or use his system, I can take ideas, bits from it, and meld them into my system to make my investing better. So that's been so useful.
Do you communicate with him directly?
Yeah, I do occasionally. I mean, I don't talk to Jason as much as I did, you know, when I first sort of come across him, because we're all busy people, I think, is the reality. But yeah, I mean, there are so many people that you just regularly have conversation with, and you get to learn which people on Twitter are very sensible, very good, you know, and you get to value their opinions and whatever, and it can really help, you know.
Are there any other names you follow and you highly respect?
Well, yeah, really good one is Conkers. You know, Conkers Free, he's excellent, really useful one. There's guys like Battleburst and Simon, brilliant leader. There's just so many. There's just so many great guys. There's Martin the, I think Martin the Brave, I think he's called. He's really excellent, and loads of new people who are just outstanding. You know, and it's yeah. You just look on my website. There's a list of good names to follow.
So, has social media changed your investing?
Yeah, I think that the big change is this access to other people, both in the sort of like, you know, new idea sense, but also this ability to bounce ideas off people and whatever. But, you know, as I said, it's also instilled a lot of discipline. You know, doing the website, which, as you say, is like a sort of form of social media, you know, it just instills that discipline that wasn't there before, that probably should have been. You know, a great example is when I started doing the website, I probably had something like 55 stocks in my ISA. And people used to just mercilessly give me grief about it. And I was like, oh, I've got to do something. And, you know, now I've got it down to, well, I'm aiming for the WD-40, but it's actually 41 at the moment. But, you know, I'm getting there slowly. But that's really helped. It's like that sort of subtle discipline that has been so helpful.
And do you generally communicate directly, or is it all of your relationship public?
I don't DM that much. The DM intends to be probably more along a sort of mentoring lines, the sort of more newer people that I DM a lot. You know, generally I say things in public. I mean, I'm not a great lover of this idea of little secret cliques of people. It's like, well, if you got it to say, let everyone know. Do you know what I mean? Okay, if you've got a really small illiquid stock, and obviously if loads of people buy it at once, it's going to move the market. So if you haven't bought it yourself, it's going to be a bit annoying if you tell everyone they all buy before you and it's up 30%. But, you know, so I can sort of understand why people do it in that sense. But really, I'd just rather be open about things. It's just, you know, there's too much deceit and sneakiness going on. We don't need to add to it, you know.
And in terms of bulletin boards, you've mentioned ADVFN. Any
others? Yeah, I mean, to be honest, ADVFN's the one I regularly use because I tend to have the phone app on my phone, and it's just so easy to, you know, to just go, oh yeah, check the bulletin board, bang, bang. It's just there at your fingertips. So that's probably why I tend to use it. Because I am a bit nervous about bulletin boards, and, you know, it's like, I'm sure we'll come on to it in a minute, but there are downsides of all these things, and we need to, you know, sort of balance everything up.
So let's talk about the downsides of social media.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that has really come into my thinking in probably the last year or so, really, where it's hit me a bit like a sledgehammer. The whole idea of noise, you know, the noise thing, the cut out the noise. I think what's happened for me personally, and I've written about this in a long blog recently called Evolution of Investor, which is about five parts. The last part should go out this week, where I've sort of talked about my whole journey as an investor across the sort of like getting on for 20 years that I've been doing it. And the thing that's really struck me in the last year or so, and this has probably again come as a result of Twitter conversations and whatever, is that I've sort of like built up this amazing, this big pool of knowledge and understanding and whatever. And I access myself to all these news sources and all this information. But I actually feel it's too much. I think I am drowning in information. I'm drowning in noise. And I've just started reading Robbie Burns's latest book, Trade Like a Shark. And one of the things he says in there is about simplicity. And that has really hit me, this whole idea that it's like I've sort of built it all up. Now I need to smash it down again. It sounds really nuts, but I sort of feel that's what I need to be doing. And one thing that really hit me was Robbie says in his book, He never reads any comment from any other investor.
Yeah.
That really hit me. So what he does is he reads the company RNSs and stuff and reads about the company website and whatever, forms his own judgment, and then he sticks by that judgment. And, you know, we've all had examples of where something, you know, can affect your judgment and keep you out of a good share or, you know. And I think there's a lot of sense to that. So I think there's, you know, as much as it's useful to get opinions from other people, and it is important to do that, there's also this downside that your opinions can be swayed, and so easily. I mean, the example I love, I've got to tell you this one because I just love it. I was reading in Investors Chronicle a Simon Thompson piece about Kromek, KMK, and I'm reading down it, and as it's going down, it says they are based in Sedgefield. And I've never been to Sedgefield. I virtually know zip about Sedgefield. But in my little stupid brain, it's going, Sedgefield. Oh, Tony Blair, he was the MP there. So straight away, my brain's thinking, Tony Blair, oh, he's a bit of a, I don't like him much. So I'm getting this negative connotation in my subconscious brain about Tony Blair. Then I'm thinking, I don't like Kromek because Tony Blair, well, what's that got to do with it? It's just nothing to do with it whatsoever. But it's this kind of really subtle subconscious bias that can sneak into your brain and just give you a sort of, oh, I don't know about Kromek. And probably there's nothing wrong with it, you know, but you get this negative perception.
Any other negativities about social media?
The time one is a problem, and that's something where, you know, people who follow me on Twitter know that I've pulled back a lot lately. I've just had to. I mean, I used to be in a situation where I could probably spend 4 or 5 hours a day on it, and I found I was just getting nothing else done. I mean, I love it. I absolutely adore it. It's addictive in some ways, and you've got to sort of keep on top of that addiction. But even now, I find I can spend 2-3 hours a day on it, no problem at all.
How many tweets do you do a day?
Loads. I mean, I don't know. I probably, I'm probably banging out 50 a day. Probably more than that. Probably 70 a day. It's a ridiculous amount.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, I do tweet occasionally. I do tweet a bit. I mean, the other thing that I think you also, you know, need to be careful of is to keep your timeline clean. So, you know, just follow the people you want to follow. For me, because I want to be open with people, I want people to be able to DM me and whatever, I do tend to follow everybody. So it's like when I see someone new has followed me, I tend to follow them almost straight away or whatever. My timeline is just a joke now. You look at my timeline, it's just so much garbage in it. But, you know, so I think for people who, especially for newer people who are trying to learn and whatever and don't want this continual wash of information, you know, be really careful about who you follow. And at the end of the day, if people are saying things that isn't helping you, then stop following them. You know, you've almost got to be, disciplined with Twitter like you have about any aspect of your investing.
And how did you learn to use Twitter? For some people, they don't use it because they go, oh, my God, how do I start with it?
I have no idea. I just literally got the app, you know, opened an account, whatever, using my phone. I tend to use my phone for it all the time. And then I just sort of played with it and confused myself and confused everybody because I retweeted everything. I had no idea what I was doing. I thought, if I don't retweet it, no one can see it. So, you know, yeah, you just get the hang of it. You know, it's like anything, isn't it? All this technology stuff, you just got to sort of get in and use it.
So investors that aren't using any social media, what advice do you have for them?
I think it's worth doing. I think just bear the caveats in mind about careful who you follow, careful of your time. It's almost worth having a time box, sort of say to yourself, right, you know, I'm on a train from 7 a.m. till 7:45. While I'm on a train, I will do Twitter. You know, and sort of time boxing it in that way. So it's almost like you're making use of dead time. And if you can sort of operate in that way, then maybe sort of late at night, I mean, if you want to see my tweets, I mean, I tweet a lot of stuff. I tend to have a peak of tweets, I don't know, just after 8 o'clock when I'm reading RNSs and I'm giving my thoughts on some statements from companies.
That's in the morning.
That's, yeah, first thing in the, you know, 8 o'clock odd in the morning. Then I tend to tweet a lot, probably around sort of like 5, 6, 7 o'clock, where I'm, you know, I've got my day's results, how, you know, how my portfolio's moved for the day and what's up and what's down. And I'm responding to a lot of tweets and whatever around that kind of time. And then later at night, once I've logged onto ShareScopes, which is probably after about 10, 15, I'm on Twitter quite a lot for probably about an hour, hour and a half, just looking at charts. And if I see something relevant on a chart that's going to go up or it's going to go down or whatever I think it's going to do, I'll be sending out a tweet about it. And quite often I'll do index trades late at night. So like, you know, last night I closed an S&P 500 short, made a small loss on it. It was a bit annoying, but I opened a long on the FTSE 100. So, you know, so I'm tweeting that stuff all the time.
And are there any people that you follow at a particular hour of the day because they have a similar pattern to you?
Well, not so much. I mean, I used to be very much like that, but to be honest, I've just got so overwhelmed with stuff. And it's one of the problems that obviously is, as you get sort of more well-known, you get more people firing questions. And I find out just answering my notifications could take hours and hours and hours.
How many DMs do you get a day?
Not too many. I'd probably get in, you know, probably in the region of 20, 30 a day, something like that. So it's quite a bit. But, you know, it is balancing all these competing things, you know, and bearing in mind, I don't want it becoming like a job. Mm. You know, I never started Wheelie Dealer for it to be a stressful, nasty thing for me. That would completely, you know, that's never going to work. And obviously, you know, I've got to balance my own social life and my health aspects with doing Wheelie Dealer, with my own investing activities, and what, you know, so there's all these conflicting things. And I know when I started Wheelie Dealer, and you're bound, you know, this is just human nature, I was giving that an immense amount of time, but I've had to reduce the amount of time I devote to Wheelie Dealer because it was just becoming all consuming, you know, and I've got other things I need to do in my life. Because, yeah, I've always said I want the Wheelie Dealer thing to be something I always do, you know, to the day they put me in the wooden box. I want to be doing it, you know, so I don't want to get to the stage where it's like, oh, this is really getting on my nerves and it's too stressful and, you know, and I don't like doing it. That's going to benefit nobody.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Wheelie. Tell everyone out there where they can find you if they haven't
already. Yeah, on Twitter, it's @WheelieDealer. So it's not Wheeler Dealer, it's Wheelie Dealer. The website is www.wheeliedealer.weebly.com.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.